Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast on day 8 of the French Open, our 8th daily podcast from Roland Garros 2019. Myself, Catherine Whittaker, alongside Matt Roberts on what has been one of those days in tennis which makes me feel sorry for people that don't follow this sport, because it has been intoxicating, Matt, absolutely intoxicating. And yes, there has been other very good tennis and we will talk all about that other very good tennis, but mostly we are intoxicated still by the memory of Wawrinka against Tsitsipas.
We're drunk on it. We're drunk on Wawrinka backhands, Tsitsipas's courage, and just one of the most mind-bending, extraordinary matches that we've certainly, I feel like I've ever had the privilege to witness. I think you feel the same. And one that has just it's already been a fantastic French Open, and this has just completely brought it to life. It was everything we hoped it would be and more. Just a stunning, stunning match.
Yeah, the most negative possible spin on the brilliance of that match today was obviously found by a member of the Whittaker family, and those were the words from my father: "It feels as though that was the final and Roland Garros 2019 is over."
Well,
I get his point, because I know we're guilty of falling into the Champions League semi-final trap here, but I fail to see how that can be topped in the men's tournament.
Possibly a full throttle Nadal against a full throttle Djokovic in the final with everything on
Maybe.
The line. But it does
but
feel
will
like.
Will there be bottle throwing in that? Will
there
be.
Won't. It does feel
will
like.
Will there be aggro?
It does feel like Nadal and Djokovic are going to get to the final, but everyone else is going to have all the fun.
Yes.
And we're going to be talking about everyone else until the final, because Nadal and Djokovic are not having these epic matches and they're happening elsewhere.
That is so true. For anybody that isn't up to speed, it was. Just a quite mesmerising match. First set goes to Wawrinka. Second set, which Matt and I watched together from the press seats, and we thought, well, this match has peaked. Second set goes to Tsitsipas. That was really to and fro. Tsitsipas got the early break. Then Wawrinka was a break in front. Tsitsipas eventually takes it. Wawrinka takes the third. Tsitsipas takes the fourth. And despite having the lion's share of the break points in the fifth, it is Wawrinka that takes it 8-6. A bit of a role reversal for Tsitsipas to what happened against Federer in the Australian Open, which is obviously where Federer had all the break points, but it was Tsitsipas that took his chances. And you are not long from the Tsitsipas press conference where I think you said it was quite affecting.
It was
the horror.
Deeply affecting. He wandered in a shell of a man, took his place on the seat and slumped in it, Tsitsipas, and couldn't even bring himself to move forward to the mic. He sat there with his head in his hands pretty much throughout, sort of whispered, muttered a few words. And some people have been comparing it to the press conference he gave after he lost to Nadal at the Australian Open, which was also a deeply affecting press conference, but in a totally different way, because then it was confusion. He didn't understand how he hadn't beaten Nadal that day. Today, it was regret more than anything, because he his voice trailed off when he kept mentioning the breakpoints. So many breakpoints, so many breakpoints. And he said, for some reason, I was expecting someone else to play for me on those breakpoints. I wasn't there on the breakpoints. I let Wawrinka do what he wanted.
But do you think he's right to feel that regret?
Slightly. I think he definitely had more chances in the fifth set than Wawrinka. It was on his racket a few times, and he, particularly his forehand, which he just pushed wide a couple of times. But equally, I think you have to hand it to Wawrinka, who, as much as Tsitsipas seems to think he let play great tennis on those breakpoints, I really think Wawrinka stepped up and just went into a mode where he didn't miss, and yet he still played forcefully. And that is such a difficult combination to overcome as an opponent.
Yeah, I mean, as my brother texted me, I'm looking back, this text came through at 4:15 p.m. So that would have been
set two
of the 5 hours and 9 minutes. He said Wawrinka has the biggest balls on the ATP tour by an order of magnitude, and I replied, I agree with the sentiment, but I'd prefer a more gender neutral expression thereof. But he's right, isn't he? He is absolutely right, and probably second in line there is Tsitsipas. I mean going back in time hugely to the first set, he double faulted to hand the set to Wawrinka, and I didn't think he was the kind of... I mean, I know anyone is capable of that at some moments, but I didn't think he was a double fault on pressure moments kind of a guy. I really have always perceived him as somebody that just plays exactly the same regardless of the moment, but it shows that he obviously does feel it, and that makes it all the more extraordinary that he was on the edge, on right on that precipice for all of the second set, for periods of the third set. I mean, okay, on the precipice for most of the match.
Yeah.
It was midway through that second set that he received the code violation for violently slamming bottles of water into the ground. And he actually, I think he smashed 3 into the ground. And then he got up and went to the fridge. And we all thought he was doing a full Bagdatis, except with bottles. And the crowd started going, ooh. And then he just took a sip from it. And that was the only disappointing moment in the whole match. What else did we have? We had him shouting at his dad in the stands, imploring him to leave the court.
He called him a zombie, which, as Hannah Wilkes put so brilliantly on Twitter, he went sort of a full PG Andy Murray ranting at the box. Possibly swearing in a language that we
PG.
Didn't understand.
It was vitriolic. I mean, we were sort of sat sort of behind and to the right of Apostolos Tsitsipas, could sort of feel the waves of vitriol coming from Stefanos. And if your coach wasn't your dad, there's no way you'd be getting away with that.
I have never wanted to speak Greek as much as I did at the end of that match, because the press seats in Longlen, to get to them, you have to kind of go under the court. And we went to them earlier, and I said to him, this feels like a place we shouldn't be allowed to be. This feels like a place where the players should be. And actually, as I left the court, there was Apostolos Tsitsipas leaving the court. And I would just love to know what he was saying, because my interpretation of it was he was analysing the match in great depth, talking to Tsitsipas's brother and just saying, you know, lots of Greek words, break point, lots of Greek words, forehand, you know. And
what was his demeanour?
He was intense, really. I mean, it was like he'd lived every single moment of that match, and he was just playing it over and over in his mind. And clearly he'd met up with Stefanos afterwards, and Tsitsipas had been in floods of tears, you could tell, in that press conference. He said, it's been a long time since I cried, but he didn't actually say
what counts as a long time in the life of a 20-year-old.
Yeah,
Does he mean since that Nadal match at the Australian Open?
Possibly.
Who knows?
But I think it's a good thing that Tsitsipas is this affected by it. I think I love that he's this hurt. I mean, that sounds...
And not afraid to show it. Not afraid to show it
and
one bit.
I think that's something that makes
it's
him
like
stand out.
Like his world
out.
Is ending.
It makes him stand out amongst the other young players, I think.
Yeah.
His reaction.
Absolutely. There's no attempt to be cool.
No.
There's no attempt to pretend that there's anything more important to him in that moment than winning the tennis match.
And I think for me, just I've been fortunate enough to watch his performance against Federer in Melbourne and now this one. But the experience of watching him play was so different both times. In Melbourne, it was like, how is this guy doing this? Surely he has to end at some point. And here, I was expecting him to play well the whole match. And he's made that transition from someone who you think, wow, this is a breakthrough, to this guy is an established world-class player. And he's made it in months, and it's incredible to witness.
Yeah, and I'm not sure there's how many people could have gone toe-to-toe with Stan Wawrinka today for 5 hours and nine minutes. Nadal, obviously, yeah. We think that's probably the biggest stumbling block other than his own physical condition.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, he's defied the laws of gravity, physicality-wise, in the past, Wawrinka. I mean, we tweeted a comment from Mats Wilander in the Eurosport commentary booth saying, I think it was going into the fifth set, that he thought Stan Wawrinka looked really weary and that Tsitsipas had the physical edge. And I'm loath to ever disagree with Mats, but I was looking at him thinking, that's just how Stan Wawrinka looks.
Yeah, and they call him Diesel for a reason, don't they? He gets stronger as the match goes on. And I didn't think he was looking weary. And
it's so recovery, though, isn't it?
I'm worried about him in the next match.
Against Federer.
Against Federer, who just breezed through. I was searching for the perfect gif. I wanted one of Federer just sort of with his feet up on the sofa, basically, just watching that match.
He would have been loving it, wouldn't he?
Oh, I mean, he's a proper tennis fan, Federer, isn't he? He would have loved it for what it was. And he'd have loved it knowing that he had to play the weary winner.
I think at the moment that he won his match against Leo Meyer and gave his on-court interview, Wawrinka was a set to the good against Tsitsipas. Little did they know how much there was yet to run. But Federer was asked, I think in his on-court interview, about the prospect of playing Tsitsipas. And he said a funny. He did a funny, didn't he?
He said he wanted Wawrinka to win, right?
He said he wanted Wawrinka to win. But then he was asked about his memories of playing Wawrinka in 2015, which, of course, is the last time he played here and lost to Wawrinka. Was that the quarterfinal?
In the quarterfinals.
And he said, I've got many horrible memories of that match. Lots of backhands going past me and terrible shorts.
Terrible, terrible, terrible Wawrinka shorts. But
I said to you, early doors in the second set, Matt, that is awful kit that Stan is wearing, and you said to me, Stan wins slams in bad kit.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, what a road he's gonna have to go. I mean, no one, to my knowledge, has ever beaten Federer, Nadal, Djokovic back to back to back. I mean, definitely in a slam, that hasn't happened.
Oh,
I just cannot see him doing it.
I've got him losing to Nadal in the semis.
Yeah, I just think the freshness will help Federer. And we were debating who Federer would have rather played. And I think, did we come to the conclusion, Stan? Because Tsitsipas is in Federer's head a little bit after Melbourne.
So.
And Federer's kind of in Stan's head just by being Federer. Although all of Stan's wins against Federer have come on clay. So I think it is a bit of a leveler in a way that on a hard court or a grass court, you'd be favouring Federer big time.
I was bowled over by the love that the crowds here have for Stan Wawrinka. I was expecting maybe a slight favouring of Stan Wawrinka, but Tsitsipas just wins tennis fans over wherever he goes. And look, he had a crop.
Yeah.
And they were vocal, but it was overwhelmingly support for Wawrinka, and more so as the match progressed. They grew, and this was partly due to how well Wawrinka conducted the whole performance, because Tsitsipas was doing all his tricks, and he does do tricks. He does do borderline stuff.
He pushes the limit.
He pushes it. They're going to change his racket very slowly, not looking like he's in any particular hurry, goes to change his racket, and he does it before his opponent's about to serve.
And I also thought it was very fitting that the match ended on an extraordinary get from Wawrinka, a backhand sort of chip up the line. And Tsitsipas, we weren't sure whether he had a play on it or not, but he didn't play it. And he just immediately went over and pointed to a mark that was out. And then the umpire came over and said it was in. And A lot of times in this clay court season, I've seen Tsitsipas just point to the wrong mark. And throughout the whole hard court swing, I just noticed how he always has no challenges left. He seems to be really quite poor at reading which one is the ball.
Press, he admitted that that ball was definitely in, and it didn't seem that there was any doubt left in his mind.
No, he said it was in, but that should be Hawkeye at slams and clay.
Of course that match finished on a moment of completely impossible drama. Yeah. Of course it did. I mean, if you haven't seen it was break point, I think either 4-all or 5-all break point on Wawrinka's serve. The rally ends in an attempted dive volley from Tsitsipas. I mean, I could have plucked any point there, but that's the one that is still being replayed in my mind over and over. But yeah, Wawrinka he let Tsitsipas kind of stitch himself up with the crowd and then pounced on it, then orchestrated it all to his own advantage.
That's exactly the word. He was so aware of the tempo of that match and when it was right to call on the crowd and when they were just going to simply respond to his tennis. And there was a game when he broke, I think it was in the second set to get back on serve, and he broke Tsitsipas from 40 love up, and he did it by each point just gradually getting the crowd more and more on his side. It was just conducting them, and the way he points to his head, I just fall in love with him when he does that. I just love that. And
he gets you, doesn't he? He makes you care.
And Tsitsipas does as well.
Yeah.
But Wawrinka does it in a different way, and just as effective and more effective for this French crowd.
And unfortunately, we only got two questions in the on-court interview from him, and that was when, of course, you were getting the instant emotional reaction. Two questions, because there's still a whole other match to come on court, a match that's still being played. I think Kei Nishikori and Benoit Paire have split sets over on Long Men. That match, very unlikely to get finished tonight. But he was choked up, if not actively crying, throughout those two questions.
And very emotional and thankful for the support he received. And I think, really, there's two parts to Wawrinka. One, he wants to win this tournament, but there is also a sense that he is just reasonably happy to be back here from a knee surgery, which could have ended his career.
18 months ago. I cannot believe that was the same guy that I watched today, that I watched
at
play
Eastbourne.
Murray at Eastbourne last year. I cannot bend my mind around that fact. It's unbelievable.
It's been such a building process for him, and it's classic, because he would have seen Federer come back from his knee injury and win the Australian Open straight away.
He had a little bitty surgery.
It was nothing compared to Wawrinka, who was
barely anaesthetised, Matt.
I know, but it's a classic case of always being in Federer's shadow, if you like. And Wawrinka has really had to work and earn his place back in these spots, and he is not going to give them up without a huge fight.
Do you think that he is not going to have enough left in the tank to beat Federer? Because the template for beating Federer at slams recently has been make it physical, make it long. And particularly, all other things being equal, you say that's a great plan for Stan, but maybe not after 5 hours and 9 minutes and at 34 years of age? Maybe not.
Yeah, I think he might have to go with what he did here at the French Open when he beat Federer in 2015 and play three perfect sets and try and take him out in three.
Knockout punch.
Exactly. But that is so difficult to do. However, we shouldn't be doubting Stan's physical capabilities.
It could be so swashbuckling, couldn't it? Because I think Federer is going to want to keep the point shorts and not get dragged into a long battle, maybe a fair amount of serve and volley.
And I was really amazed by how well Tsitsipas dealt with Wawrinka's power. He seems to be able to really handle it, not having to resort to hitting slices. He can hit it back with topspin. For me, I think Wawrinka will be able to rush Federer more than he was able to rush Tsitsipas, and we might see Federer throw in a bit more slice. But I think it's just credit to Tsitsipas that he was able to live with that sort of barrage of Wawrinka ground strokes, and be fascinating to see whether Federer can.
We think the schedulers in a couple of days' time are going to have a bit of a tough task on their hands, because they'll have Wawrinka against Federer, and a reminder, as if anybody needed reminding, that there is a huge chance that this could be Federer's last French Open. I really don't think he's playing clay next year because of the Olympics, and in two French Opens' time, he'll be very nearly 40. So, big chance that'll be his last match at the French Open. Deep at that, or 11-time champion Rafael Nadal up against a Frenchman. I mean, again, big if here, Benoit Paire won set all against Kei Nishikori. But Nadal against a Frenchie? Or Federer against Wawrinka?
I mean,
why don't you just put them both on long then, just to keep it fair?
Yeah. Yeah, I really don't know what they'll do. Neither would surprise me, being on Chatre. I mean, you can make a case for both, but I personally would put Federer or Wawrinka on Chatre.
Spoiler alert, Rafael Nadal won in straight sets, 6-2, 6-3, 6-3, over Juan Londero. Tell me this. Juan Ignacio Londero.
Yes. I didn't see a ball of that match because
the French Open app at least knows that he's right-handed.
He's doing better than ball.
He's got really bad hair. I don't know if that's recent hair.
Oh, no. Yeah, he does look like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of blonde highlights.
Frosted tips are not in fashion. It's not 1998.
But, I mean, I get the feeling he actually competed really well today. It was a...
He had snazzy kit on.
It was a reasonably lengthy straight set defeat.
Isn't it? All? But that's because of all the
trouser picking.
Yeah. Thanks for helping me out there, Matt. Yeah, that's because of all the faffing.
Yeah. he's a grinder on clay. He was just never going to beat Nadal today. And didn't.
Moving on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Yeah.
We had the women's, other than Stevens Muguruza, which was won by Stevens in... I mean, I don't think Muguruza had a nightmare, but Stevens was just better today. 6-4, 6-3. That match, unfortunately, overshadowed by the dramatic final set of Tsitsipas and Wawrinka, which is a real shame because it deserved a greater spotlight. But I mean, anything would have been in the shadow of that match at the time. So Sloane Stephens, she will play Britain's Jo Konter, who won through in straight set 6-2, 6-4. It was a very convincing, very, very convincing win over Donna Vekic to become the first British woman through to the quarterfinals here in Paris since Jo Jury did that in 1983. And that stat will be wheeled out again if she wins again, because Jo Jury reached the semi-finals that year. But I mean, it's not out of nowhere for Jo Konter, because she was a finalist in Rome and before that a finalist in Rabat, but it's still a bit out of nowhere because she'd never won a French Open match in the main draw.
As she so often stresses.
Week.
Yes, she's still on for the reverse Ostapenko, isn't she?
Yeah.
Winning no matches and then...
Stranger things have happened. I mean, stranger things happened 2 years ago.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point you make about how it wasn't totally unexpected, because she had clay court form coming in here. And I just think Konter's whole career if you look at her best results at slams, they've all come when she's had a good build-up. She's all about that confidence and just getting on a roll. And so I've got
the
down
the absolute opposite of Sloane Stephens, who requires no rolling whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, she won the US Open when she barely played a match. But Konta, she ended 2015 really strongly, started 2016, reached Australian Open semi-finals. 2017, she'd won Miami, reached the final in Nottingham, and then went on to reach the semi-finals at Wimbledon. And 2019, I think it really started with the Fed Cup. Then she had a good clay court swing, and now she's in the quarterfinals here. I think that's so important for Jo Konta. You would never pick Jo Konta to have a random good result. It's all about the process and building and getting confidence. And it's always felt just so sort of alien, clay court tennis, to her. But I think she's always said it's just because I haven't been confident at that time of the season. And now it starts to all make sense. It's like, well, yeah, she's got a good serve, she's got great ground strokes. That works on any court. And she's just added, she's improved her movement a lot, and she's added a little subtlety to her game, yeah. That malleability that we spoke about.
I think the rules about what games work on clay are being slightly debunked a bit. I mean, Karolina Pliskova, that doesn't look like a clay court game. Petra Kvitova, that doesn't particularly look like a traditional clay court game, but the rules, it's not like that anymore.
Yeah, we might still end up with Halep, Stevens, possibly in the final, who you would say are clay courters, but plenty of people who aren't natural clay courters can play well on this surface and are playing well on this surface.
You'd obviously pick Stevens as the favourite for that, but then you look at the head-to-head and see that Jo Konta has beaten Sloane Stephens twice this year, including in Rome a couple of weeks ago, which is huge, surely, mentally, and mentally is everything for Jo Konta.
Yeah, knowing that she can beat Sloane Stephens on a clay court, she has fact that she can do that. I'd still take Sloane Stephens.
Yeah, me
that
too.
All said.
I mean, I take Sloane Stephens, as I said yesterday, when Sloane Stephens plays her best, I take her against anyone. So, I'm getting Sloane Stephens.
Yeah, I think maybe Konta might have preferred to play Muguruza matchup-wise. But I think she'll give Stephens a good go, and she is officially 100% in the mix, Jo Konta.
Because there's only 8 players now, therefore they're all in the mix.
Indeed.
Brilliant. Marketa Vondrousova is in the mix. Petra Martic is in the mix. We're going to have a drop shot off in that quarterfinal.
Do you think Petra Martic is in the mix? I mean, I know she's in the quarterfinals, but I'm
there's 8 of them, Matt. They're in the mix.
I'm thinking if there's one player who's not in the mix, I think it might be Petra Martic.
There's a gang of 7 hanging out there in the mix, and Petra Martic is playing Scrabble in the corner on her own.
Possibly. I thought she was good today to get past Kaya Kanepi, who's a difficult player to beat at a slam, but I worry about the gears. I'm not sure she's got gears to go into that a lot of players left in this draw do have, including Vondrousova.
Vondrousova's got gears. 2-0 against... I mean, Sevastova looked like a ghost of a woman.
Sevastova went from playing the best match of the tournament to, I think it has to be said, the worst. She was really poor.
It was dire. It was dire.
She was really poor today. She couldn't find the court. It felt to me like she couldn't handle Vondrousova's ball. Like, it was coming onto her strings and she wasn't able to control it.
I interviewed Vondrousova after that match, and in my head she was quite a tall sort of statuesque type person, and she was teeny tiny.
Yeah, she came into press and I asked her, you just seem so composed and so comfortable for a teenager, how are you doing this? And she said, well, I had my difficult year last year.
When she was 18?
When she was 18 and she still won.
She thinks
won.
She's only going to have one in her life.
And she still won about...
That's sweet.
And she still won about 15 or 16 matches. But
hope you didn't burst her bubble.
But she
the
does
worst
seem,
is yet to come, Marketa.
She does no, seem so really. Unaffected by being in a Grand Slam R16 quarterfinal. It's like...
She didn't blink today. There was no
she
like...
She doesn't feel like a teenager. And she doesn't. She doesn't have the ups and downs that you expect. The emotional ups and downs.
I'm trying to make Drop Shot Dragon take off for Marketa Vondrousova. I almost put that to her in my post-match interview, but decided it would be a little bit unfair because she was so sort of in the haze of the moment, sort of pitching a new nickname to her. poor thing. I mean, was she even born when Albert Portis was a thing? Anyway, I ducked it, Matt. So,
well, Tamaini Carriol asked her, has anyone ever said that you hit too many drop shots? And she just laughed and said no.
There's no such thing.
No such thing.
Kei Nishikori, incidentally, the fact that he is locked in battle with Benoit Paire probably means our dreams of a Nishikori underarm serve are dying with the Parisian light this evening.
He's going to have to do it when he's thrashing Rafa Nadal in the quarterfinals.
Evidently, he's just saving it for the right moment.
The only time he's going to do it is when he's leading, and against Nadal, it's pretty much now or never situation.
He'll be 2-all in the fifth set, he'll start cramping, and he'll just underarm serve.
God, yeah. It would be amazing.
So, tomorrow's schedule is just loading on my phone. It's not too bad. We start with Sofia Kenin, Sonia Kenin. Both of them are going to take to the court against Ash Barty.
Great. That'll be a good match, that, I think.
Good match. Battling. Followed by Djokovic against Struff, then Thiem against Monfils, and then Halep and Swiatek. But the women have the graveyard slots again on both the main courts, and we don't have time to go into it in detail, but it's kind of, yes, I mean, we praised the equity of the scheduling earlier in the week, and yes, it's two women's, two men's, and sort of in the headline sense of the words, there is parity, but we all know there are recognised good slots and recognised bad slots on those courts, and we know that slots 2 and 3 are the good ones and slots 1 and 4 are the bad ones, and the women have been in 1 and 4 today and tomorrow, yesterday as well, because Serena played at 4 yesterday.
And you could definitely see one of the men's matches going really long, like we had today, and therefore taking all the eyeballs off whatever the fourth women's match is on both courts, really.
Absolutely. Thiem Monfils, I mean, if that's a straight setter, then I don't know tennis.
Agreed, yeah.
Speaking of which, we've got a bit of unfinished business with Dominic Thiem, haven't we? Because he's done a thing.
He has. It was yesterday evening, he was giving his press conference just as Serena finished, and it was announced that Serena was going straight to press. We heard that, didn't we, as we were recording?
Yep.
And it was reported initially, we now know to be inaccurately, that Serena demanded Thiem to be kicked out of the press conference. I've spoken to people today, and that is not what happened. Serena Williams wanted to do press straight away, or she was going to leave. Now, that's the part where you could potentially criticise Serena, because it's not unusual for a top player to go straight to press. But threatening to leave and not do press put the organisers here in a slightly tricky situation, because Thiem was already giving his press conference in the main room. Now, Serena would have been happy to go into room 2, but it was...
As Djokovic did last year when he lost to Cecchinato.
But it was determined that it wasn't suitable enough in terms of size. And also, what I found out today, there was also an interview going on in room 2 at the same time. It was at the back. So if you were just looking on the monitor or the screen, it would have looked like it was empty. But there was actually an interview going on. So if she was going to have to do press, she was going to have to interrupt someone. And it was a very difficult situation for the people, for the organisers to be in, because if Serena hadn't done press, all the journalists would have been very cross about that as well.
Yeah, she would have left. She would have done, because frankly, the fine, what is it? I think a maximum fine of $10,000. The fine isn't enough. I mean, Venus Williams has been skipping press conferences and taking the fine for years. So, I mean, yeah, that wasn't an empty threat. She would have left. She would have taken that fine, and everybody would have been disappointed. So I really sympathise with the organisers. Yes, somebody could have stood up to her. That could have happened. Somebody from the WTA could have done that. But I can't honestly say that I would have been able to do that. So I'm loath to come down too hard on those that probably weren't able to. And I think the intentions were to try and ensure that everyone got to speak to Serena Williams, which fundamentally was the most important thing. However, it was rubbish for Dominic Thiem.
It was.
It doesn't feel right, and I liked seeing him get peeved about it.
Yeah, we were debating whether that was a good thing that he got peeved.
It's a joke.
Yeah, Federer.
No, he's not Scottish.
Did you see Federer made fun of the way he said that?
Yeah.
He said, I love his accent.
It was the most sort of straightforward Germanic way anyone could possibly have said, well, maybe I leave too.
Yeah, and it was kind of out of character for Thiem to get that irate about it.
But he really thought about it first. He sort of sat there and thought, can I do this? I'm really annoyed and I really want to leave and this feels really rubbish, but I'm not sure that I can. Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm leaving.
But my take on it was, well, if he was in a really good place mentally and comfortable with his game and pleased with the way he was playing, would he have got cross about it? I think he would have been perfectly, perfectly entitled to, and I wouldn't have blamed him at all. But he is the kind of guy who I wouldn't expect to get that cross about that sort of thing. And I did wonder whether
bit of stress
it was
coming
a sign
out.
That he is a bit stressed about the way he's playing.
Yeah, David Law interprets it differently. He thinks it's great to see Dominic Thiem expressing himself more, and that's a sign of sort of greater comfort of his with his status within the game. I think there's an argument for that, but I think come down on your side that it's so out of character. We saw him stressing out in Rome, didn't we, about the scheduling, and he lost early there.
Like,
so
if I was having a bad day, a bad week at work, I would get cross
touchy
about something that I normally wouldn't get cross about.
Yeah.
And maybe we saw that, or maybe it was just a situation that really just wound him up, and
oh,
good on him for saying how he
felt. Are we saying
that
Dominic Thiem might lose to Gael Monfils tomorrow?
I think it's possible. Partly because I thought Monfils was injured coming into this tournament, but he doesn't really seem to be. And he's actually had a really good year, Monfils. Sort of consistently good. And
efficient,
yeah,
as well.
And he keeps winning in straight sets here, which Thiem hasn't been doing.
The day is rounded off on Chatriotomanda by Halep and Swiatek. I'm going to go and watch Swiatek.
Yeah, that I think.
Watch her lose.
I think it could be a step too far, but great experience for
but
her.
But the steps thus far have been very good. Longlen is Siniakova against Keys. Then Fanini's Zverev. That's the men's match of the day for me, although Khachanov Del Potro. That's good too. And then Anisimova and Bolsova. I'd rather a ticket for Longlen tomorrow.
Yeah, I think I would. 2 days in a row, I think, yeah. The Longlen ticket.
Pick of them.
Was the one.
Doubles is happening too. We will cover the doubles when it gets closer to the business end of things, because Mova lost in the doubles today, so we're going to steer clear.
That was the
today.
Real match of the day.
Matt's still getting over it.
Yeah, because Mova and Bencic lost to Azarenka and Barty. What a... Well, you said to me, there's a weak link on that court, Matt.
I mean,
then you made the point.
It was a star-studded court, let's face it.
Yeah, and I can see Kuzmova being quite a good doubles player.
Because she doesn't have to move.
Doesn't have to move,
yeah. Azarenka and Barty now play Stoza and Zhang, the Australian Open champions. That was one of my moments of the year, actually, watching those two win that Australian Open.
And I noticed today another women's doubles result was that Ostapenko and her partner, who's name off the top of my head I can't remember, but they beat Shea and Strizkova, which is just a fun pairing as well.
Shea and Strizkova, so that's brilliant.
Ostapenko is now getting some wins other than just her 7th win the singles title here. She is getting some in doubles as well.
We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, with our executive producers, tennisballs.com, with Rio with a Y. It's been a quite glorious night of tennis, day of tennis, hot 5 hours, 9 minutes of tennis, and more to boot as well. But that particular match, Tsitsipas and Wawrinka, will live long in both of our memories. Apologies if you're not a Tsitsipas or Wawrinka fan and you've been bored for large portions of this podcast. We've dedicated most of it to that match, but it really was one for the ages, I think, and it's been a great joy for us to be here for it and cover it for you, the Tennis Podcast listeners. We hope you've enjoyed it. We hope you're enjoying all of our daily podcasts from this quite sensational French Open. We've got 7 more of them to come.
My last day here tomorrow. I'm quite crushed about that.
You're
going to
get sentimental already. It's all right, though, because David Whittaker says the French Open's over now, so you're not going to be missing anything. See you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.